WildTalkRadio.com.
Theme song.
This is the Firefly Funhouse, and I want to introduce you to some very special friends that I met along the way.
This is EC3.
Hey, this is Max Brown, King Robert from the Royals.
This is the undisputed future Seth Rollins.
Hey, this is Kane from WWE.
Hello, this is WWE Hall of Famer, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
I'm Bristol.
And I'm Aubrey from ATTV Flipper Flop Vegas.
Hi, this is Bree.
And this is Nikki, and we're the Bella Twins.
Yes, this is Broken, not Hardy.
The greatest man that ever lived always likes a good rap, and you're listening to the greatest rap.
Satisfaction is guaranteed.
It's time to experience the award-winning The Rack.
Fly, my pretties, fly.
I love kickball.
I'm back, taking souls and digging holes.
I'm gonna break you, bitch, you hear me?
With your host.
They've been lying to you. Heroes don't exist. Y'all become addicted to the illusion of what a hero does for you. Have I mentioned that I was once addicted to eating sponges?
Lindsay Ward.
Look at me, woman.
And you can just call me Taker.
Oh my God, it's Taker, 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 Taker. Does Taker hate me? Oh my God, it's Taker.
And she was a wicked, wicked child who spat and swore and chewed tobacco.
I like puppets.
Stickers! And her producer, Sir Rocket.
My little creatures of the night will now experience the magical art of puppetry.
This right here means I'm the champ that runs the camp.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
We're here.
Yowie wowie!
And welcome to The Rock Live here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, presented as always by MBG Films. YouTube.com/MBG1211. I am Sir Rocket, joined as always by the man who loves himself some Bray Wyatt, the one, the only, the intern, King Kings.
Wait. Oh, God damn it! I have to fill Lindsay's spot now! Bray, Taker, Taker, Bray, Kane's penis, there. Things have taken a turn tonight, folks, and I just found out about it about 10 minutes ago.
Hold on. Hold on. Oh. I'm gonna hang up on you. Hold on.
Okay.
We're doing this again. And I think...
Am I back?
Joining us, as always, the one, the only, Lindsay Ward.
So, I'm not kidding. Did anybody hear me scream no really, really loud as my internet died right in the middle of the show intro? Did anybody hear that? Because that's exactly what happened.
No, but we'll take your word for it.
It's getting ready to say we're going live, and everything stops. My TV stops. Everything dies, and I'm just screaming at the top of my lungs. This is the one time living in a house has its benefits, because my neighbors would be really complaining if I lived in an apartment. So yay, yeah, I'm having massive ass internet issues. Thanks, Comcast.
We love you, Comcast.
Fix my shit, Comcast. Fix my shit.
So, by the way, if you have Amazon Prime, link your Twitch account's called Twitch Prime, you can subscribe for free and bring back Lindsay's internet. Just hit the purple rectangular button below the screen.
That's not going
to
bring back my internet. It could help pay for it, but it's not going to bring it back.
You're supposed to lie and just go with it. Just hit the button. Anyway.
Pay for Rock's internet. Subscribe to the channel.
So
I'm apologizing for the quality now. It's going
you
to
sound
suck
fine.
Out.
You sound fine. Legitimately, you sound fine. So, okay. So we had a plan, chat. We had a plan. We were going to do a show. We had a fully formatted show. Then the internet died at 9 o'clock. Legitimately at 9 o'clock.
It did. Legit at 9. We sat here for an hour waiting for it to come back. It did not come back. I've stared at a blank TV for 2 hours.
She has. She has.
I have run out of social medias to browse because I keep going back and forth between Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr. And Twitter.
She has. She's been doing all that in the last 2 hours. So, what we're going to bring you tonight, I guess, is a mini version of what we were planning on doing.
Okay? Yes.
That's sort of what we're going to do. Couple things. I'll get it all the way. Impact and 60 on Access TV is coming this on June 2nd. It's going to happen after Impact on Tuesdays. A retrospective of the best of TNA, best of Impact stuff. Cool. That's the one story. There's a brand new book coming out from DK Publishing. You'll hear more about that next week when we review it on the Rack Extra Reviews. That's two.
If my internet ever fucking comes back.
If her internet ever comes back. Drew Gulak, he's left WWE, but he could also be back in WWE any day now.
Yeah, I want to elaborate on that just for a second.
Go ahead.
He did not get released. His contract expired. They could not come to terms, so he is no longer employed by them. Now, if they renegotiate a deal and he resigns it, he's back, but he did not get fired. He did not technically quit. His contract just expired.
He wants more money. They're not giving more money, and they went up to the last day. That's where that stands. Now, before we get into the more fun and stuff with the Undertaker documentary, because that's what we're going
to
do.
Yeah, we have to talk about the biggest story that happened this week, and it's not the happiest story. It's actually extremely sad, and we're not going to go too in depth with it, because we really kind of don't want to, just because we don't want to make everybody sad. But basically, the story broke earlier this week that Chad Gaspard of Crime Time fame, former WWE superstar, was caught in a very nasty riptide out on Venice Beach in California. And he and his son were actually caught in it, and the lifeguards went to go save them. And he told the lifeguards to save his son before they saved him. And they were able to save his son, thankfully, and his son was not injured severely.
He's fine.
He's completely fine, which is wonderful. But unfortunately, Shab was pulled under. He was missing for, I believe, about 2 days, and unfortunately, he washed up on the beach yesterday. He did not survive.
Wednesday morning at 2 a.m., he washed up on the beach.
And so, it goes without saying that our thoughts and our prayers are with his family. His wife is very obviously devastated. She stayed on the beach until he was found. She never stopped looking. They called off the search late Tuesday for him, but she never gave up hope that he would be found. I think everybody was hoping that he would turn up on land, safe and sound, somewhere else, further down, but unfortunately that did not happen. So he was a wonderful human being. He will be missed. He went out a hero, saving his son, and that's an important thing. And my TV is trying to come back, which is indicating that it might be coming back. But that's not important right now. So sorry that Chad's gone.
It sucks. The whole situation sucks. And we hate reporting death. And this is, as Lynch mentioned, he went out a hero. Like, legitimately went out a hero. He saved his son's life ahead of his own. Everything you've heard and read and all that stuff about him, how nice a person that he is, it just shows what kind of the end result shows what type of human being he is. Right, Brent?
Yeah. I was going to say, like, a lot of the stuff that I'd been able to read and heard from, you know, the wrestling Twitters and wrestlers who have come out is that he's genuinely one of the good guys that you would ever meet behind the scenes. And it's one of those things of, you know, normally there might be a little whisper, or, you know, someone might have some kind of story or gripe. No one had that about him. And that's just a testament of the kind of person that he was. I remember him back in, you know, back in the ring with JTG. They always looked like they were having fun. They genuinely just loved what they were doing. And again, just echoing the sentiments, his last act was being a hero. And I don't think anyone can, you know, everyone wishes that they could, you know, do something good in their life. And he made sure of it by, you know, with his last moment, saving his 10-year-old son.
Yep. So I'm very sorry again for his wife and his kid. And the fact that, you know, there has been such an outpouring of love, like Brent said, from not only the wrestling community, but the Venice Beach community, from everyone as a whole, is wonderful. I haven't seen any links or anything like that of places that you can donate as of right now. So I would just keep an eye on Twitter to see if any of that information comes out. There's obviously been nothing about any type of arrangements or anything like that either. So if you're interested in that information, please keep an eye out on Twitter for that.
I do have one thing.
Okay.
Collar and Elbow brand has a shirt out for him, and 100% of the proceeds, according to their Twitter, is going directly to his family.
Yeah.
So if you go to Collar X Elbow on Twitter, there's the link there. You can purchase a shirt that will help the family.
Yeah. So if you have the funds to be able to do that, please go do that.
And that's collarandelbowbrand.com as well.
So there you go. So we don't really have a good transition for this. This is going to have a weird flow to it.
Yeah.
Because now we're going from that to the Undertaker documentary. Ironic in a way.
Yeah.
Where we're going to be talking about episode 2 of the Taker documentary, which aired this past Sunday on the WWE Network. If you haven't checked it out, I would strongly urge you to just be very careful with this episode, because there are elements of a very graphic nature in the beginning. Basically, you get to see the inside of the Undertaker. That's something I never thought I would see. And yeah, so if you do not like blood and guts and gore and very graphic surgery video, I would recommend skipping over a part of this documentary. Like, I think it's like, what, 13 minutes in?
Skip from 12 minutes in to 13 minutes in. So you skip it until 1 minute if you do not want to see the surgery stuff. Why I know that for it? Because I had to tell Lindsay.
Yeah, he had to tell me where it was. Because I knew it was in the episode because it's in the previews. So it's like, I didn't know the extent of it. So it's like, well, you just watch it and tell me where it is so I can just skip it.
And that's exactly what happened.
So this episode focuses mainly on Taker's life after retiring, his decision to go ahead and get the hip replacement surgery done on, I believe, his left hip, and get that taken care of, and then just enjoying life with his wife. We get a lot of information about their relationship and how that relationship works, how they met, how they fell in love. The fact that he fell in love with her because she could throw a football is...
That's a story.
A story. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I think it's oddly sweet.
That is the most Texas thing ever.
Yeah, I gotta agree with that. That was the most Texas thing ever. The fact that he's like... And he's like, it's not the blonde hair and the blue eyes and the slamming body. It was the football. Right, Mark. Right. It was the football. Okay, honey. Sure. Uh-huh. It was the football. But we get a lot of information on that and kind of how that all works. And then we kind of get the redemption story. But before we get to the redemption story, I have to talk about the surgery. Because I was slightly horrified, not necessarily in a bad way.
It's
but
not
just
a bad way.
It's slightly horrifying what that man has put him through or put himself through, because they're listing off the amount of surgeries. And what was not, it wasn't necessarily that. It's when they got to his fingers, because they're like, have you ever broken any bones? And he's like, yeah, take your pick. And then he's trying to like hold out his hands, right? And you just hear Michelle in the background go, he's trying to straighten his fingers and he can't do it.
That's how bad his fingers are.
That's how bad his hands and his fingers are. I was like, oh my holy god, like a couple of them are just bent. just like legit, they're bent and they're permanently bent. It's like, oh my God. Like, that was horrifying and a little scary that that's what he's put himself through for this industry and for us. And it's like, God bless you, Mark. Just God bless you for doing that. Cause I can't imagine like breaking as much and, you know, having as much surgery as he's had just to keep going. Also, another note.
Also, Vince McMahon giving him crap
about
the surgery. Like, Vince was, his surgery was scheduled for like 1:15. Yeah, hey, you're going to be hopping, moving in out of the hospital at 5. And it's like, what are you talking about?
Because yeah, apparently
Vince got up and out right away.
Yeah, apparently when Vince has his hip done, and this is something they do, is essentially hip replacement is technically outpatient, I think. And I've heard more than one person doing this, where they do the surgery and they pretty much get you up and moving right away.
They want you up the first day.
Yeah.
Whether you want to stay or not, that is up to you. But they want you up and moving day one, because you cannot sit. If you sit, it gets bad.
Yeah. So they get you up and moving pretty quickly after the surgery. And then he opted to stay because he has to fly and he just wants to make sure that he doesn't have blood clots or anything like that. So Vince was like, oh yeah, you know, so the surgery's at 1:15. So you're going to be out by 5:15. And he's like, no, that's not going to happen. So that's kind of a testament to their relationship, which we kind of see more of that later. In the show, because after we see the surgery and we see him go home and we actually get to see the artificial hip joint that they put in.
They gave him one, yeah.
They're like, this is the biggest one they make.
Yeah. What was impressive is how pain free he was when it happened and how fast he was able to actually get up and walk the way he was. Because it takes a while. But he's been through it once before, so it's like he knows how to get his body moving again.
You have to imagine that was so wonderful for him to just like get up and not be in pain in his hips anymore. Because you watch him walking around at 33, and it was bad. It was really, really bad watching him just walk around. And so to see the difference between the artificial hip and 33 was just everything.
As he called himself, Bloated Elvis.
He did call himself Bloated Elvis. We'll get to that. But of course, Michelle's like, the danger is he's going to start feeling better, and then he's going to want to go back to wrestling.
So he's going to want to go back to wrestling, but it's like, and she already played out the scenario. Like, okay, WrestleMania is in New Orleans. I mean, he doesn't remember being there last time. So, you know, to him, he's going to start feeling good and want to go back and, remember his last match in New Orleans. And he gives this side eye look. Like, damn, woman. You're really putting me on blast. Damn, woman.
She knows. That poor woman. Like, if anything, this made me feel really bad for her. Because she's just, like, going through all this shit with him. And she's just like, yeah, okay. All right, we're just going along for the ride here. Like, I'm sure it's not quite that. Because she does not strike me as that kind of person. But I felt a lot of pity for her in this episode because she's just trying to like support him as best she can while trying to very softly be like, okay, maybe you shouldn't, but you're not going to listen to me. So we're just going to do this.
And there was one other side eye look he gave her when talking about, you know, how they met and stuff. He gave another side eye look. It's like, damn, you just throw me out there. Because he was talking about how he was chasing her and everything around and trying to, you know, really put it on the moves. Like, goddamn, woman, I'm trying to have a rep here. Goddamn.
And she's like, yeah, no, that's not what happened at all. Just based on what I've seen so far, I believe her. Anyway, awkward, moving on. So we flash forward to a couple months later, Taker's feeling better. And they kind of talk about the whole contract situation with The Undertaker, where his contract apparently did expire and he went up to corporate to quote unquote sign a new one
to talk
and to sign a new one. Basically, that's what that's code for, so they could get him back under contract. And I believe this is the 15-year deal that he signed, so that way they, you know, lock him in
before any startup promotion would exist in 6 months later.
Right. So we see this very awkward retirement beard. He didn't bother to clean himself up at all.
It was like a goatee. It was like a ragged goatee.
It was really ratty. It was bad. It's like, did nobody hold him down and like clean him up? at all.
So, of course, they get the corporate, and, you know, they're waiting for Vince, because what's Vince doing on a Saturday at corporate?
Working out.
Working out.
Yeah, I like that, how they get there, his secretary's there, Taker's giving the secretary shit, and she's like, yeah, you can just wait in his office, he'll be right in, and they're like, fuck.
I know what this means. So, we all thought it was weird when we talked about Money in the Bank, right? And how Vince was in jeans. Him in an orange t-shirt is so weird.
An orange t-shirt and chinos, I believe.
Yeah. So
like
weird.
His weekend polo look or something. I don't know. It was very strange, to say the least. But that's okay. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It was just, you're seeing things that you never thought you would see, or you never imagined that you would see, because you have a certain perception of people. Vince in any form of casual attire is just like, no. Because we always see Vince in suits and ties, and he's always dressed up, and because he's always playing the corporate businessman. So to think of casual Vince, that's not a thing. And what's interesting is Vince kicks the cameras out when they're getting ready to talk.
It's like, you got enough. Go away.
Leave.
Go away now. You got your B-roll. Get out.
This is not going to be filmed.
This conversation's not going to be shown on this documentary. Sorry. Bye. And he does that with everyone. It's like, yep, you can get the look of us sitting down. We'll have a casual conversation-like thing. And then get the hell out.
But what was telling was then they talk about the relationship between Taker and Vince. And they really kind of go into what it is. Which is essentially, they would take a bullet for each other. I am now thoroughly convinced that The Undertaker is the son, is like an adopted son of Vince McMahon's. And I'm pretty sure if Vince could leave the company to Taker and Hunter, he probably would. But yeah, you can tell that they have a genuine love, and I say that in a platonic way, for each other. Because they've worked together so long. Like, they've worked together for 30 years, and the biggest thing that they talked about was how loyal Taker had been, and Vince rewards loyalty. But they also go into how Taker is Vince's right-hand man. Like, Taker's right there with Vince, because they've been through everything together. They've been through wars together. Like, so it makes complete sense that Taker is right there with Vince. And the best part of it was, they asked Vince, what does Taker mean to the company and you personally? And he kind of tears up and he says, I can't do that.
You can't do that to me. Don't do that. You just can't. Nope. We're done.
We're done. And he kills the interview right there. Like, but he tears up. It's so sweet.
Yeah.
Like, that's that. I think that says everything that it needs to say. Like, Vince could not verbalize how much Taker means to himself and the company any better than just tearing up on camera and talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And or not talking about it in this case. And then Taker kind of gets a little emotional talking about it, because he's like, you know, yeah, it's everything. You know, Vince gave him his start. Vince is taking care of him. You know, Vince has been there for him in good times and bad, and really helped him along and really kicked him in the butt and been a father figure to him and been a brother to him and, you know, everything else. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool that they actually talked about it.
Yeah, LeMans mentioned Shane got emotional talking about Taker too. Because, yeah, Shane pinned a whole story. It's on ESPN.com about their relationship and how they lived together for a while. And they're brothers.
Yeah.
They would share rooms and stuff. And they would have wrestling matches in the rooms. And he kind of talked about how they got his ass kicked. And then how to figure out ways to kick The Undertaker's ass. And there's a whole, you gotta go look, it's on ESPN.com. It's a really, really good story.
It is, yeah. Shane did a wonderful interview about The Undertaker. I would strongly encourage everybody to go read it or listen to it, because I think it's available for...
No, it was an article. Shane penned the story for ESPN.com about The Undertaker.
So, and I love that all this stuff is now coming out about him. Mm-hmm. Side note, there's one thing that they cut out of this show that I really wish they hadn't cut out of the show, but they put it out as an extra, which is as we get to the next part where Taker's going into his sort of retraining phase.
Yeah, before we get to the retraining phase, really quick, we got to talk about what happened in the meeting.
Okay, talk about it.
After the meeting, he told Vince, you know, everything was going on. And he said he would be the, in case of emergency, break glass, but he would also be fine if he never wrestled. And what was really interesting is we then get to the Rumble, and you're watching Taker just walk around backstage at the Rumble being the supportive husband.
It was weird.
It was weird. It's like
in a good way.
It was in a good way, but it's like he had the Michelle role because she was in the Rumble, because that was the first woman's Rumble. So he was there supporting her, and it was just a weird thing, him walking around, him talking to everyone. But it was a cool look of seeing Mark interacting with people. Like, you can actually see him interacting, and yeah, him and Kurt going back and forth was great.
The Kurt face.
Yeah.
The Kurt face, which I don't think was in this one. I think it was in the last
Kurt
one.
The Kurt face was in the first one, but yeah.
But just go back to that every time he interacts with Kurt Angle. But yeah, so Taker's going on and on and on and on and on about how he's done, how he's good, he's content, he's happy. And then they kind of broach the subject of Taker doing WrestleMania. And Taker's like, no, I mean, if you need me, obviously I'm in, but I'm really happy, I'm retired, I'm feeling really good, my goatee is messed up, but that's okay, you know, and he's being supportive to Michelle, he gets to be a dad, he gets to do all the things that he's doing, and then Taker makes the fatal mistake that leads to many, 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 many things, which is Taker decides to watch the match from 33 with Roman.
Yeah, before that, back to the Rumble really quick.
Mm-hmm.
It was one note that is very key, you know, everything that's happened. He was watching AJ Styles and he's like, I wish I could get in the ring with that kid. He's like Shawn. He's like Shawn.
Yeah.
He gets it. He like, gets it. Yeah.
Yeah. Taker's wanted AJ now for about 3 years, at least. At least 3 years. Like, he actually says, the one guy that I'm sorry I missed
is that kid right there.
Is that kid right there? Because he reminds me of Shawn. So it's like, oh, okay. So confirmed, The Undertaker's in love with Shawn Michaels. Okay. Got it.
But yeah, then he said, so it was like the key to see where he's at was he wanted to watch the match back. Boy, he did not like himself in that match. I was slow. I was overweight. I couldn't move. So, it wasn't Undertaker-esque.
This is where the line bloated, I look like bloated Elvis got dropped.
Uh-huh.
He was not happy. He was no longer content. He was not thrilled with it. He's watching the moves. And he expressed regret because he's like, this is not the match that Roman deserved.
Nope. He was full of regret, and he even talked to Roman about it when they met up later.
And Roman was super gracious about it. He was like, no, absolutely not. No, it was fine. And Taker was like, no, it wasn't fine. It wasn't okay. You deserved way better. And Taker admits that, like, for 33, he wasn't there. Nope. Physically, he wasn't there mentally.
He shouldn't have been in that ring.
He shouldn't have been in the ring. Like, he full on admits that, which is very cool of him to do. But what this does, and this tells you the type of person that he is this drives him to essentially fix the mistake. And that's the whole reason why he comes back at 34 to face John Cena is,
redemption.
He wants to redeem himself as the Undertaker because he realizes that that wasn't a good match. To go out at 33 was not a good match to go out on for Roman, for the fans, for anybody. And I even remember watching 33 and we were all kind of like,
he didn't look right.
He's like, I'm not right here. Like, this is like, he's trying. He's trying really hard. The soul is willing. The body is not.
Yeah. So he has to get back in shape. So like they do for everybody, they got him a ring. He just had to find a building. So he found a building. He had to get the power turned back on.
It's an abandoned jet ski building that's out by his house that has been abandoned for like 10 years. They had to clean it. They had to get the power turned on, the water turned back on. They had to fix the roof. It's like, did you just rent it or did you just buy it? Because at this point, you should just bought it.
He probably bought it.
You know, knocked it down. He built it as a training facility. Shit. But he gets a ring from WWE. They give him an old one. And you see him and Michelle and a couple helpers coming in and helping them set the ring up and set the building up for him to train in. And what was really neat about this was watching him do just really basic hitting the ropes, taking a bump, that kind of stuff, and doing it not as the Undertaker, but doing it as himself, and just kind of going through that mental checklist of, okay, I can do this, I've got this, this feels good, this feels right, this wasn't right, you know, and just kind of seeing what all he can do.
yeah.
what he is capable of, because basically he told Vince, you know, he kind of updates Vince that it's like, well, I need to see what I can do with the hip. Like, I need to see how it all feels, because he hasn't been in the ring in a year, essentially, to figure this all out.
He hasn't, but he hasn't felt this good, and he went all the way back. He hasn't felt this good since WrestleMania 25.
Yeah, that's how long he's been in decline. Not decline.
Pain.
Pain. That's how long he's been in a lot of pains is since WrestleMania 25.
So he had
so think about that.
Yeah. So he had to give Vince McMahon, okay, an idea of when he's ready to do it. So he does all this work and, you know, whatever. And he gave themselves a deadline of the Chamber pay-per-view just to let Vince know, hey, I'm good. So what if Taker does in Taker fashion goes, film this. And he starts runs the rope, starts taking a couple bumps, gets up, looks right in the camera and basically gives Vince a message. I ain't as good as I once was. But I'm as good once as I ever was. I'll see you in New Orleans. And then does the Taker tongue eye thing.
And they sent it during the show, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, he sends Vince that during the show, and basically he either gets a hell yeah or a fuck yeah back.
So then, after all that does, he gets back in more training. They send him Primo to get to do a real match with. Primo puts him over.
Primo was excited.
Yeah, he was. I'm saying he said he looked good. He felt good. He was doing good. Then we got all the stuff about the build up and how they're doing the setting of the match and how they hit him when he showed up at WrestleMania 34.
Okay, so we'll get to that, but I want to go back to the stuff with Primo, because again, you kind of see, like, just watching him talk to Primo, and he's like, okay, do this. I'm going to do this. Just that little section where they're trying to put together a piece of a match. That was neat to see.
Yeah.
Because, again, you never get to see that side of him. So it's like to see him actually, like, planning and thinking and doing the moves and seeing the process of how that all works. That was really, really neat to me, because I'm a nerd for that. But, yeah. So he goes, and then we see Taker training. This poor 50-something-year-old man putting himself through hell to retrain because he has to build up his cardio. He has to lose weight. He has to do all this stuff. And granted, he drops like 30 pounds to get himself back in essentially ring shape to build up his cardio again. He gets a trainer and he's like, this is hell. I'm about to put myself through 60 minutes of hell. And then the part that gets cut, that I'm really upset that gets cut, is that Taker goes to one of those like cryogenic places to do the freeze thing, whatever it's called. He regrets every single one of his life choices that has led to this moment, because they're explaining the process to him and he's like, crap. Like, there's just an FML look on his face, because he's talking about that all I get are a pair of gloves, a robe, and a sock, and like socks, and that's all I get to do this. That's it. I'm gonna be in there butt ass naked except for gloves and socks. Like, that's it.
And his
That's
beanie.
And all
his,
I get.
And his beanie.
And his beanie. He got to keep the beanie.
Oh, going back to the beanie. He wore the beanie for surgery.
They played his theme in surgery. Like, what the hell? But anyways, so he gets in the chamber, they take the robe off, there's this cute girl there that's explaining everything to him. She peeked, FYI. Don't blame her in the slightest. But anyway, no, I don't think she actually peaked, but like, she's standing there explaining the process that it's like, it's going to get down to negative 200 degrees. And you just see the smoke start to rise, and you just see him looking down, staring forlornly at something. I could tell if he was concentrating or he's watching things happen. Just the way that he handled that was just great, because she's like, there's something like, oh yeah, it's super easy and it's great and it's not a problem. He's like, you're not in here. Which cracks the crew up. Like, the crew kind of loses their shit for a minute.
Yeah.
Because he's all sarcastic about it. And like, so then they let him out and he gets his robe back, and then he's going to go put his clothes back on. And what I'm pissed off about is, okay, so, and it's going way longer than it should be, but I don't care. Anyway. So, it's been kind of known for years that The Undertaker has a heavy dislike, to the point of hatred, of cucumbers. right? Like, for some inexplicable reason, this man does not like cucumbers. Nobody knows why. But it's a story that's kind of circulated around about him, right?
Yeah.
He acknowledges that he doesn't like them, but he clarifies in this clip that the whole ones are okay, which I'm like, okay, good, because I would be worried about you grocery shopping, sir. And it's the sliced ones that bother him. Sliced cucumbers, he hates them. He has to slowly back out of a room whenever they're there. They make him physically ill. Like, he actually acknowledges that that's a thing, and he has issues with it. I need to know. I need an explanation as to why. Like, what happened to him in childhood that caused him to hate sliced cucumbers that much? That there's a physical response to them. I need this information. And does the same thing apply to pickles? I feel like somebody should ask him that, if he likes pickles, because I wonder if he realizes that they're sliced cucumbers.
Don't tell him that.
Speaking of don't tell him things, apparently he also knows about the memes, guys. Clean the internet now. Because if he found the memes, he found everything else. And God save us if he did. So anyway, so Taker, they go to New Orleans, and Michelle and the kids go first. And they're there on their own. Taker's not with them. He comes in separately. I think either, like, the day of Mania?
The night before, to do rehearsals.
To do the rehearsals. They sneak him in the building. He has a covered golf cart. He has, like, a tarp up to get him in and out of the locker room. He's trying on his gear. He's making sure everything fits, everything works.
By the way, his gear was a little too big for him.
Yeah, it was the same gear from the year before, and he's, like, holding out his pants and showing exactly how much weight he's lost, which he's very proud of, and he should be. And then we see them, like, walking him up to the stage, and they're showing, like, the John Cena stuff superimposed into it, and how they're getting him to the ring, and he, you know, it's all secretive that he's there, right? Until it's revealed that he's actually there. And everything goes smoothly, everything goes swimmingly, it's good. But what's kind of interesting is Michelle's not that happy about it, at least not after a while.
She's happy for him, but not happy about it.
Yeah, she's happy for him. She's happy that he had a good match and he enjoyed it. And, like, he was a little upset because he's like, I trained for 45 and we only went for 15. And he wasn't happy about that. But Michelle basically is like, I know where this is going.
That's in the preview. She knows where it's going.
Yeah, is for the next one is, okay, now the cycle is going to repeat and we're going to be back where we were, where it's like for a minute, she was actually really hopeful that he was done, that he was out, because, like, he broke character, he left his stuff in the ring, he had the surgery, they've been chilling out, they've been hanging out. And then it's like he saw the match and it's like, okay, he's his own worst critic, but, you know, he felt like it wasn't good, he wasn't happy with it, so he's gonna go back and have one more, which, you know, okay, that went really well for him, so he's like, I'm feeling good, I'm having a good match, I want to do it again. And now he's gonna start pushing to wrestle more because he feels better. And she's just like, I know where this is going.
Because what they end up showing for the teaser is Saudi is now going to be coming to play in the next episode.
I want to see them explain that.
Where he gets some opportunities to feel himself like himself again and get back in the ring and all that fun, happy stuff.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see that. But this part, this was really good because it was nice to see him more just relaxed and chilling at home and get more, like, family details and that kind of thing and see more of the person. Because I think in the first one we saw the person, but it was mixed between Taker and Mark. This was much more Mark, so you get a much better sense for him and how he is, which I like him very much.
Yes, they are going to 157,000% talk about Goldberg.
Because
there's been clips, if you've seen the clips of what's been teased for future episodes, it talks about how he gets dropped on his neck. And they talk about it. And it's going to be talked about in it because it legitimately is a big part of what this year was for him. And becoming Taker, and it's the redemption thing, and that's why he comes in banged up and hell, he does this and he does that, and it's, yeah, we're going to talk about it, or they're going to talk about it probably in the episode four or five, probably, I would think maybe next week, I don't know. But it's going to be it's going to be talked about because it's a big story chapter in his redemption, because he could have been seriously hurt.
Yeah, I think they say in the teaser clips that he was like an inch or two short of being dead. That's how severe that drop was.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he was able to walk away from it and be just sore is kind of a miracle.
And wrestle 6 weeks later or something?
Yeah, and wrestle that close, or wrestle later, yeah. So, and I think this goes, is this going to go all the way up to this year with AJ?
I don't know.
That's the one thing I'm kind of curious, because they say it's shot from, like, 2017 to 2020, so it's over a two-year period.
It probably will be with it. So what happens this week is called End of the Era is the next chapter. End of an Era. And then they're taking a two-week break and returning back on the 14th, I think, for new episodes after that.
Yeah, which the break is probably they're going to put more of the new stuff together, or they're still putting it together for the ending. So I would suspect that at least the build-up to AJ, the lead-up to AJ, is going to be in it.
I would assume it's touched on, and he will talk about it and everything like that. I mean, yeah, like, granted, there's a lot that the man has done that could have killed him. Yeah, I mean, but it was when he was dropped on his head, and he could have,
There's willing stupidity, and then there's unwilling stupidity. This is the unwilling kind. Just saying. Because, yeah, I think at least for Shane talks about the dive that he did off the cell and how Taker wanted absolutely no part of that whatsoever.
He's like, no, we don't need it. And he's like, yeah, we do.
Shane's like, I'm doing it.
You cannot stop me. Everyone wants to see me jump off this cell. This is why it's made.
Yeah. That I think that's why Taker's look is Taker's look in that match, because he's like, you okay?
That's some bitch. They did that.
He's like, okay. All right, we're fine. Let's go home now. Bye. So yeah, so that was the second episode of the Undertaker documentary. Again, if you have not watched it yet, sorry about spoilers, but you're listening to the show, so not sorry. But I would strongly recommend that you go watch it and check it out. Episodes 1 and 2 are available right now on the WWE Network, and then it debuts for on-demand viewing pleasure at 10 a.m. on Sunday. So be sure to check that out. So
I think we're done for the night.
We're done for the night. Okay, Rock's saying we're done for the night. So if you're just joining us, we're not doing NXT. We're done for the night. My internet is being an asshole, and it's coming up and down. Like, it can't decide if it wants to be stable or not. So I am not likely playing Fortnite with friends, but I may stay on the phone if Rock and Brent play Fortnite with friends, and if we can get Omega. But I'm probably not going to be gaming because, again, internet issues. So thank you guys so much for bearing with us. I'm really, really sorry about everything being messed up and the internet dropping throughout the show, even though I'm on my phone. So should be back to regular schedule next week. All that good, happy stuff. But Rock, you have stuff to plug, so plug away.
Yeah. So here's the deal, Chet. We're not doing Fortnite with friends tonight. We're not going to stream it because almost 12 o'clock already, so we're good. Saturday night has nothing to do with our router. It's an outage in the area. Has nothing to do with pulling and it's not her.
Been done about 5 times.
It's an outage in the area. That's where we're at.
It's Comcast. The internet's going up and down because they're trying to restore service.
Yeah, that's what's going on. Supposedly they call Saturday 5230 day. I don't know what that means. You all figure it out. Saturday night, midnight, fcbrlive.com. If they want to talk about stuff on Sunday night, it's Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern. We know we'll be live Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern for the Raw Talk Show, because we talk about Monday Night Raw. We will be back next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of The Rack, 10 p.m. Eastern. We will have an episode of The Rack Extra for you. Yeah, we're reviewing a book. I don't have the name of the book in front of me because I don't have the physical book, but we're reviewing a book because I've read the digital copy of it.
So. Our friends at DK very nicely sent us a very, very cool book. We will be reviewing it.
Yes. We'll talk about that next week when we put out the review. It's Rack Radio Show on all your favorite social media platforms. It's also on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You can follow at Wild Talk Radio. Facebook.com/WildTalkRadio Network. If Amazon Prime will link it to your Twitch account, it's called Twitch Prime. You can subscribe for free by hitting that purple rectangular button below the screen. You can also
use Paper Rocks Internet.
you can use creator code RocketSock in the Fortnite item shop. Hashtag ad. Hashtag epic partner. Brent's been here, kind of. He's talked for a minute. Brent, plug stuff.
Well, you guys can normally find me after this show or on Saturdays with Fortnite with friends. Keep an eye out after Saturday because I may be on something else discussing all the fun of AEW and Double or Nothing. Yay! And if you need to find me anywhere, you can find me on Twitter at Kane Kittens. So, yeah, there you go.
Lindsay's on Twitter at Lindsword. She's on Twitch, twitch.tv/Lindsword. Just follow it because then you can become part of the Fishbutt community because that's a thing. Do it. She'll stream again. She promises.
When my internet gets fixed, I will stream again. I promise. I'm just trying to get it all stabilized and things. And I thought it was stable for a minute, but it clearly is not. So whenever I can stream again, I will stream again. Just watch my Twitter and I will let you know.
All that fun, happy stuff. Make sure you check out our sponsor, MBG Films. YouTube.com/MBG1211 because Matt is awesome. He does some great things with wrestling figures and stuff. So check his all his photography and stuff like that out now at YouTube.com/MBG1211. So, I'll do this. So for everyone who's been on this show, thank you. We'll see you next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern for another edition of Rack. And coming up in a month, 8 years of this show.
Oh, wow.
In 1 month.
8 years?
Yeah.
We've been doing this show 8 years?
In a month.
Holy shit.
We'll see you next Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern. Long there is a Wild Talk Radio Network right here at wildtalkradio.com. Hey,
WildTalkRadio.com.